optionally live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive quasi-independent podcast covering the Dallas Mavericks and the NBA. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I do sports. With me, as always, is the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter. You may know him as Ballin' with Brian, but his mama calls him Brian Gutierrez.
My mama does call me that. She does call me that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And she throws the middle name in there sometimes when you
you
act a fool.
I don't need the middle name. I definitely don't need the middle name. So, yeah, we're live. We're recorded.
We're recorded.
Yeah.
And we're everything. Yeah, Brian saved us again from my engineering treachery, forgetting to hit record, which has happened.
No, that's on me because I always got to do my job.
That's the first time in at least like 3 months, though, that I've come that close.
Yeah.
Now, this is our 30-second podcast.
Air quotes.
Previous to that, I did another podcast in 06, 05-ish time frame that had about 20 episodes. So in 50 podcasts, I've forgotten to hit record, seven, eight times. And at least with us, there's never been collateral damage. With my boys back in the day, there was a couple times we did an entire segment and realized that it had gone. And we didn't stream back then. So that meant it was for nobody but the dog, man. It went into the ether and it was gone. So... yeah, this is what you found, the Mavericks Outsider Report. We're here, we're live, it's special, June 8th, 2011,
sure.
Episode 32. Brian definitely doesn't know what day it is.
I never know what day it is, especially lost now in the midst of the NBA Finals.
In the midst of playoff euphoria, which is where we've been now for several weeks. So that means we're going to have a packed show. We have a packed show in December, I mean, not to brag, but... but definitely in June. If you're talking ball in June, it's good to be talking ball. So that's what we're going to be doing today. We're glad to have you on board. We're going to be getting into, obviously, the NBA Finals. That may or may not be relevant to you if you're a Mavericks fan. We're also going to be taking our requisite look around the NBA. There's been a little bit more movement in the NBA outside of just the game that your team is playing, which is the only game in town.
And now you're getting rumors, too,
yeah.
Which is fun.
So, you know, there's a little bit of meat there for the first time in a few weeks, which is nice. We're going to have Big Bro Mark Followill jump on the second segment here at 6:20. So look forward to that. Definitely stay on for
at
least that.
As long as he's not an In-N-Out burger. If he's at In-N-Out, we're in trouble.
Then it's all over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, let's get right to it.
Game four.
We're breaking up the tried and true format a little bit here. We're going to get right into what happened last night because it was kind of a big deal, and that's game four at the American Airlines Center. Some good things happened.
I know this was on June 7th because that was yesterday. If you keep me within 2 days, I'm okay.
Prince's birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, who knew?
All
besides
right.
Me and Chris Arnold.
All right, so last night... big game. Mavs had to respond, basically, because they were in a 2-1 hole. You do not want to go down 3-1 in the NBA Finals.
People don't come back from that kind of deficit, Brian.
And we're going to have... Followell told me he's got nuggets galore in his segment.
I'm sure he does. So, did you catch any of his work on the post game last night? He was in rare form.
Really?
If he's 1/8 as amped as he was last night, then that segment's going to go...
oh.
Way long, but that's okay.
Sweet. So, yeah, the Mavericks made a move. A big move, actually. With a little guy.
That was the news all day yesterday leading into the game was the big move with the Puerto Rican, J.J. Barea.
The freaking Rican. Uh-oh.
The little porker.
There it is.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming.
You knew it had to be. As soon as you said little, the flag went up in my brain.
Yeah.
I will admit, and I've been the champion of the Rickster. Going back to last Labor Day when we did our first show together.
You were wanting to get into jacuzzi.
Heart-shaped
jacuzzi.
Me and Rick, man, we're going to have a cold beer and talk ball, and he's going to tell me his favorite stories of kicking reporters in the nuts.
Oof.
And it was going to be great. And, you know, I'm in this corner. I think he's a great coach, and I think he's definitely added to his resume, obviously, here in the last couple of months. But I had some unease. Within my gut area.
The bubble guts?
The bubble guts returned.
Oh.
The bubble guts had left after OKC. I was just strangely calm. I was just strangely almost... and a part of it has to do with the Miami pathos, which I'll probably get to later in the show about how it affects me mentally as a longtime fan having to be playing Miami again. But Yeah, the bubble guts returned because, man, you're making a change on the fly. That's when you're playing blackjack and you're like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to put $100 on this hand, and whatever happens, happens. I'm ready to go back to the room and crash. And then you draw a freaking 11 and you have to double down. And you're like, I got to do it. I have no choice. And you don't want to, but you have to. That was the feeling. And I was not all that encouraged by it, actually, to be honest with you, man. What'd you think?
Encouraged by the end result of it?
No. Going into the game.
Going
into the game, I felt more. I got the sense that there was more that could go wrong than go right. I didn't understand why, whatever motivation you might have for making that switch, why you wouldn't just make the switch 2.5 minutes into the game.
I don't remember the exact figures for the run that they had, but they had that lineup in the starting lineup for last night in game 3. And they made a run.
It was 15-3 or something.
Yeah, they were behind, and when Brea came in with the starting lineup, they made that run. So apparently that was enough to make a move in that sense.
Left an impression.
But it made a big impact on the rest of the rotation because there was doubts of, okay, what's going to happen now with kids' minutes because you got Brea in the starting lineup. Is Jason Terry still going to get his minutes? What's going to happen to Marion? Because you heard Carlos say, we're giving Marion way too many minutes, and people are like, whoa. This is the finals. He needs to be playing 43 minutes or whatever. So there's all kinds of doubt. Is Stevenson completely out of the rotation now? So on and so forth. But to Carlisle's credit, man, he knows how to manage the minutes.
He made it work. And, like, yeah, you got to give him all the credit in the world. The fear I had was that, number one, you're right about Marion, but I supported the idea of bringing his minutes down. He had to play literally every minute LeBron was on the court. What little they tried him off when LeBron was on the court probably was only in game one, and it didn't really work out too well. But you really wish that you need enough out of him late that you got to wonder if that's not starting to take its toll on him. So I understood that. Obviously, the run that was made in game 3, you know, that was addressed, and that made a lot of sense as well. But I just had the nerves of adjusting on the fly. You just never know. It's like it's a... If you make the change and then you don't win the game, it's backlash.
Yeah.
And that can potentially – you're gambling with the psyche of the team. But, hey, guess what? The guy who gets paid to draw up on the whiteboard and the X's and O's and manage those guys
– and nut punch people.
And nut punch media members. He knows the team the best.
Yeah.
He made the decision. I had the fears. He had talked himself out of those fears. I am not him. Clearly, there's reason for that. So it worked out, and you got the best performance in his playoff life from DeShawn Stevenson on top of the advantage of, A, getting to start Bibby out. I'm sorry, getting to start JJ out with Bibby covering him instead of Chalmers, and then B, getting to reduce Marion's minutes, which I believe probably – was the driving factor behind all that, personally.
It also kind of worked. Well, it didn't work out, but Marion hurt his calf over the course of the game. But everything.
Do you think that there's any... I mean, different people have reported that with different levels of severity so far today.
Everything seems to be...
Yeah, I think that was incidental. I think that DeShawn, to me, leaving DeShawn in there for the balance of the fourth quarter was a result of what you were seeing on the court, and there was no reason to mess it up. So I think they were just rolling with what was working, and the calf thing, maybe that was what got him out of the game initially, where you normally would go with what I call the closing lineup.
Right.
And then when it started working, you just roll with the punches.
I mean, Brea, the numbers don't look great for Brea, especially shooting-wise, but he had at least 2, possibly 3 layups that were like, gravity just killed that boy.
Yeah. He had a better game, though.
No, yeah.
For that, and all taking that into consideration, that I believe he had at least 2, if not maybe a borderline 3, definitely 2 butt-pucker misses. Take that out of the game, and you still have a guy that had his best game of the series, which speaks more to his underachievement in previous games, but he was more effective. He drew some early fouls on Bibby. They were physical with each other. Bibby never got into a rhythm. Now, do you attribute that to JJ, or do you attribute that to Bibby finally being Bibby?
When does he ever get in a rhythm, though?
Right. You know, I heard somebody say that on one of the many sports talk shows I listened to today, but for me, that means that Bibby's Bibby.
Right.
He is who Dennis Green thought he was, and that's okay. But still, it worked. It still worked for JJ. It elevated him just enough. He had 4 assists.
Yeah.
He definitely hasn't had 4 assists in any of the previous 3 games, so okay, I'll take it.
So I go back to Stevenson still, because even though the offense really wasn't panning out as much as they liked in that first quarter when things were getting tough, Stevenson was just drilling those threes, and it was huge.
And he was getting more looks from the corner, which right. I think what's been lost in the analysis of what Stevenson is or is not able to bring to the table offensively and how he's ebbed and flowed as far as his production. He's always been significantly better from the corner, and I felt like he, after his early season there, where he was doing so well shooting threes, I felt like his opportunities from the corner kind of took a nosedive, whether it was decisions he was making on the court, whether it was what people were giving him or trying not to give him or just what, I don't know. But, you know, he had at least two from the corner yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think that if you can get him that shot, you're way better than him out there, you know, free throw line extended, which is kind of where when scary. He gets the ball there, you get into shenanigans territory.
And then even defensively, man, I like the fact that you had a fresh body ready to go at Wade or LeBron. Just mattered how it worked up matchup-wise. And ultimately, he went on LeBron a whole lot, and he didn't back down. Yeah. Didn't back down at all.
And before we get into what the headline of the game really is, which is what happened with Dirk and what happened in the fourth quarter, the defense and Stevenson's freshness and just – his presence, plus, don't forget, Brian Cardinal over mothballed Peja.
Tomorrow's his birthday, by the way.
Brian Cardinal?
Peja.
Oh, Peja? Do we know how old he is? 34?
34. So I asked.
Man, he's an, I'm sorry, I'm 31 and in change. He's an old 34. He's an older 34 than I'm a 31.
I brought this up today.
Love the guy, but ...
Tomorrow, does he play more seconds than his age? Does he play 34 seconds tomorrow?
Doubtful. Doubtful.
We'll see.
But, you know, Cardinal, he played like 7 or 8 minutes, you know, but...
I like what he did on Bosch.
I was just about to say, this was the discussion at work today over lunch, which is, there's really not anybody in Miami's front court, Bosch, Haslam, Anthony, basically is all you're really talking about, that you really worry about with Cardinal guarding them. He's fundamental enough and scrappy enough that you know he's not going to be playing 20 minutes. Don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. He's going to be out there for 8, for 10, maybe 11 or 12 if he's knocking down shots. I'll take that all day long, given the situation Haywood's in and the fact that he has to play not only backup Dirk minutes, but maybe a little where he and Dirk are the 4-5, and then whoever's doing whatever on whichever end of the court is a mishmash, but you know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, I'll take that. But he and Stevenson both... In the way the rotation shifted their roles, established a defensive mindset. Cardinal earlier in the game, because he obviously didn't play in the fourth quarter, but earlier in the game with some little more physical. I've been waiting all series for a hard foul on Dwayne Wade. I didn't see one from him that I can remember. I think he got one in there, but it was an arm foul. It's a blur for me too, dude. It was a crazy night at the arena last night. But point being, with him out there, I know he delivered a couple good, solid fouls, tried to step in and draw a charge from the freight train. It didn't happen, whatever. But that's a tone. The defense generally in the fourth quarter was much more physical, and I think you could attribute that to Deshaun being given the opportunity and the entire team, but that's for another segment.
And then when you talk about the fourth quarter, you got to talk about Dirk. I mean, the guy is literally sick, and then sick in the basketball sense where – he's just dominating fourth quarters.
Filthy sick.
It's just, I mean, the news didn't really come out until probably the second or third quarter on a heavy basis, but you heard news or rumblings all day that he had been sick.
Well, it was a weird the way the game started because he came out gunning so hard. You almost never see Dirk doing that. Puts up three shots right after his first three, right after the ball touches his hands, makes all three. Everybody in the arena is thinking, you know, this guy's going to go for 40 if he goes for 2. And then the next two or three possessions where he did get the ball, he put him up just as fast. They just didn't go in. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I thought, which I've felt all series, that he's been rushing a little bit on offense. I think his lack of a normal Dirk-like efficiency, I felt like he's had to rush some things. Miami's made him just uncomfortable enough at times where he's felt the need to rush a few things. But I thought, oh, geez, is that getting worse? I hope not. Well, my theory now, in hindsight, is that his thought was, I'm going to put up as many shots as I can while I have the maximum amount of legs that I'm going to have. And then down the stretch, we'll just see what's left in the tank. And so Maybe that's what it was, but weird game for him, going 3 for 3 and then 1 for 11 or something god awful right after that.
But then in the fourth quarter, the ball did not feel any pity for his sickness. The ball just kept on going his way, and he was doing whatever he could, and then Jason Terry showed up as well. He had that 4-0 run when the deficit got to 9, and he had that 4-0 run.
Right, and that closed it to 74-69, and there was a timeout there, and that was roughly, was that 9 minutes?
Yeah, it was about 9 or 10 minutes.
Basically,
left.
At that point, everybody in the arena stood up and didn't take a seat for the rest of the game, and I was still kind of in hold-it-down mode, and so I thought to myself, I'm just going to sit here and chill for another few possessions and see what happens, and things started turning, so I couldn't stand up. I had to hold position. Nobody move.
You're not a little stitious. You're superstitious.
Nobody move. It was only about that. Mm-hmm. Nobody move. Like, I had cricks in my neck from watching the finals when I used to root for the Bulls back in the 90s when the Mavericks season would be obliterated
done
in mid-April.
When's the draft?
I would lay a certain way with my head like on the chair like I'm 11 and I'm like, oh, I can't move. You know, so I've been doing it for 20 years. What can I say? So, I got screwed, was glued to my seat looking through cracks between people, but
little cracks,
but really either way. But what you ended up with there from 74-69 onward was, well, obviously the 9-point lead before that, but at that point that was the turning point that Miami from that point forward was on their heels offensively, because Dallas's defense dug in. Mavs could not hit a shot though.
Yeah,
luckily Miami was irresponsible enough at times on the boards to get some loose ball fouls that probably in headier times they would not commit.
That problem earlier though.
They got to some, well, and when you have guys like that get by on athleticism and they know that the rebounding has been a strength for them in the series, you can't really fault them for continuing to try and push that needle. But it led to some free throws for Dallas. There were some shots that in previous games, a few open shots for Miami. I know Haslam had one on the left baseline that didn't go in this game. I know Bosch had one that after starting off really hot, didn't go in late in the game. Wade was still awesome and still Wade. But generally, once you got to that point, it was very difficult for Miami to score. And then once you got into the last 2.5-3 minutes, it was impossible for Miami to score. The Dallas defense did everything that was required of them to pull that game out, even missing open looks to throw enough of a dagger to push a lead to 4 or to 6 or to 5 or whatever. They were able to get it done on the defensive end, and if you're a Mavs fan, you have to love it.
Before we go real quick, LeBron just had a game where he literally did shrink. I mean, the problem was in game 3, he was being questioned about shrinkage.
I should have gotten a YouTube of George Costanza talking about
the
shrinkage.
Pool? Yeah.
Can't believe I did.
Man, he just had some problems.
He just didn't look like himself, you know, and there's a lot of theories as to why that is. That's all anybody in the NBA sphere is talking about, and I suppose that's okay. As a Mavs fan, I prefer to talk about the Maverick angle on things, and that's why y'all are listening to us mm-hmm. right now. But yeah, man, old LeBron just was unable to execute in a meaningful fashion. You know, in game 3, he was the distributor and he made some key plays, and so that was nice. But
that's nice.
It's hard to deal with.
All right, so we probably need to go now.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk to Big Bro Mark Folliwell, voice of the Mavs. And we're going to break it all down for you,
like
right?
a fraction. That's up after the break. Mavericks Outside Report, MavsFastBreak.com, Mavs.com, Analysis.com,
Basketball.com.org,
TedJonesBroadcastingCenter.com.
Yes, sir. Moving like the fog on the Cumberland River, I was leaving on the Delta Queen.
We are back. Mavericks Outside Report, Ted Jones Broadcasting Center, done with some Ryan Adams.
And there was might have been an intermediate song in there, but I couldn't tell you what.
Oh. Well, it's a good thing I didn't ask you who it was.
Yeah. Then. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry to disappoint.
So we're back, and we've got our good friend, guy we like to call our big brother because he's such a big help to us, Mark Folwell, TV play-by-play voice of the Dallas Mavericks right now on the Mavericks Outsider Report. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good. Yeah, I think you guys I think you guys got weirded out when I was referring to you guys as my sons. So
we embrace it.
Well, you know.
Yeah, so now little brother's good.
You gotta give yourself a little more credit. You're not that old.
Yeah, you're not that old. You didn't have that fun of a life early in your life where you're like, let's enjoy this life right now.
That would be pretty crazy because, yeah, you're only like 9 years older than me. So, yeah, that would be a wild childhood.
This is our third chat during the playoffs. And the get-together on the Thursday night at the Twisted Root over by SMU seems so long ago, it's not even funny.
Yeah,
that's true.
And it was not even 2 months ago.
Yeah.
It would have been, I think we would have been April the 14th would have been the day that we got together at the Twisted Root, and now here we are doing this again, basically, 8 weeks later.
And we really anticipated, and we mentioned this last time we had you on, we anticipated that we would be chopping up incredibly mundane, what would you do if you were negotiating a new CBA, Mark, ... And thank God we've postponed. I mean, I'm enough of a geek that I can get into that, but maybe some of the folks that want to listen to this are just going to, you know, they're going to see if the Rangers are on or whatever, and thank goodness we have lived to fight another day, and that's where we find ourselves right now with a tied series. Now it's a best of three.
Good grief.
And I just... From this point forward, man, I mean, just talk. There's been some high quality basketball. Maybe not if you're a Mavericks perfectionist, or definitely if you're a Heat fan either. But just the closeness of the games and being in it to the end. And if you're a fan of basketball, you have to be liking this.
Yeah, the thing about it is it may not at times be the most aesthetically pleasing, but what you respect about it and what you like about it so much is that it's just so damn competitive.
Right.
I mean, it's two teams with guys who so badly want to win that they're playing at such a high level of competitiveness that's what makes the series so entertaining and so gripping. And I heard last night, and I have not done the research on this to see if we have another close game in Game 5 tomorrow night, what will be the record, but this is, historically speaking, the second closest NBA Finals through four games. The four games of this Finals have been decided by 15 points total, 8 in Game 1, plus 8 for Miami in Game 1. The Mavericks with a 2-point win in Game 2, so there's 10. And then a 2-point Miami win in Game 3 and a 3-point Dallas win last night, so there's your 15 points that the four games have been decided by. The first four games of the 1956 finals between the Fort Wayne Pistons and Philadelphia Warriors were decided by a combined 11 points.
I'll have to watch that on DVD tonight.
Yeah.
I've got that on my iPad. I watch it when I'm bored.
You probably need to get Paul Arizin, get your Paul Arizin fixed tonight and watch that.
Wow.
I think George Yardley might be part of that. You should probably get back to me on all that tomorrow, Brian.
I will
about
do that.
George Yardley.
And
Paul Arizin, the inventor of the jump shot.
There you go. Wow.
That's incredible. You want to talk originators? I mean, you know, Julius Erving, get to the side. This guy invented the jumper.
Yeah.
He really did.
Crazy. But
that was his claim to fame when he passed away a couple of years ago, and that was noted in his obit. That was the guy. He was really the first guy who ever shot a true jump shot. Paul Arizin.
Kind of makes you feel like you haven't accomplished anything in your life, huh?
Hey, man, I may get to do some Maverick basketball, but did I ever invent a shot? No.
Yeah, it just doesn't compare.
You set mean picks, though. I remember that.
That's true. That's true. I did take out Earl Casey on a pick at the downtown Oklahoma City Y, and he still remembers it.
Yeah. He's still limping.
In for a sweet-looking jump shot now.
Well, we were just, before you jumped on, Mark, we were kind of going over the game story of Game 4, and we'd pretty much covered the Mavericks angle, which we can still get some of your thoughts on that. But we were just getting into talks about LeBron and the conversation that's now swirling in the NBA universe.
Your best friend, LeBron.
Oh yeah, all of our best friend, LeBron. I mean, he's invited over to dinner anytime, open invitation. About what's up with LeBron, obviously, the 8 points and kind of disappearing in the fourth quarter. And which of the narratives, if any, are you latching on to personally as far as what you think happened with him last night in terms of production and game presence?
Well, I think it's a guy who's used to being the alpha dog, and now I think we all clearly see through four games of this series, getting to see Miami up close and personal, that in late-game offensive situations, the alpha dog on that team is Dwayne Wade. And I think that he is sort of searching to figure out what exactly his role is supposed to be, because he's being asked to do something, or I don't know if he's being asked to do it, but he is putting himself into a position where he has a role of something that he's never really had before in his basketball life, I would suspect. I mean, it's not like he's never passed before a late-game situation, but he's just not the guy that everybody's looking to right now. The ball is in the hands of Dwayne Wade most of the time, and he's making decisions. Am I going to shoot it? Am I going to drive it? Am I going to facilitate? What am I going to do? And so I think that's probably where LeBron is having his biggest struggle is, I'm used to being this great takeover a game player who once scored, I think, 24 of his team's last 25 points.
Right.
I remember the Cleveland-Detroit Eastern Conference Finals game, that Game 5 back in 2007. I'm used to being someone who takes over games on that scale. And now there's another guy on that team who does that. And so I think that's probably where he's struggling.
I'm actually very proud of you for not saying just doucherness, because I know that's an easy go-to move right there.
He was saving it for the next question.
It is an easy go-to move on my part. Yes, I know. But I didn't do that. I didn't go to just straight doucheness.
Going back to the Mavs side real quick, I don't know if you heard anything today, but Donnie Nelson was actually a guy that was talking quite a bit at Mavs practice today, because apparently the Heat were running late. So Don was like, hey, I'll pass some time. Let's talk.
Right.
And one of the things he talked about in terms of Dirk being the guy he is, especially last night in Game 4, he said this was basically the most inspirational gut performances in Mavericks history. He said that it was also their version of Willis Reed. Now, when you think of that, is that kind of taking things way too far than what they actually were?
I don't think it's taking it way too far, because clearly it was inspirational that the guy was out there and playing not anywhere remotely close to 100%. So, the only thing that would stop it short of being comparing it to Willis Reed would be that was in a Game 7, and that gave the Knicks a particular lift there in the 1970 Finals. It resulted in them winning that game and a championship. So I think we probably need to make sure that this thing crosses the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
Before we put it quite to that scale, but I don't think it's a major stretch by any stretch, if you will, of the imagination. I think that it certainly was inspirational. And as I'm sitting here scrolling back through some of the moments of Maverick playoff history in the last decade, in terms of an injured player or a guy who was sick or injured, I can't think of anything that was on that order inspiration-wise.
Yeah,
I mean, Dirk had his tooth knocked out against San Antonio in Game 4 back in 2001. Remember when that was caught on camera and he jumped over the table,
yep.
jumped over the
mm-hmm.
score table and ran back to the locker room and then came back later. But that's not, I mean, they went on to lose the series in the next game after they won that game. That was just a dig in and stay alive, and we're not going to let Reunion Arena get closed down by losing to San Antonio. And Nick Van Exel had some inspirational performance, but his inspirational performances were just that he went out and backed up his talk.
Right.
And that run in 2003. And then beyond that, is it the Sagana job playing with a broken nose in Game 7 of overtime
Ooh.
Against the Spurs?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Ooh.
But that is a good one. But that's not Dirk. It's not the face, to borrow a term applied to Michael Young all too often. I mean, it means a lot. And, for Donnie to evoke Willis Reed, obviously, Willis Reed got the first two buckets of that game and then basically didn't play the remainder of the game, I think, if at all.
Right.
And so production-wise, it's a completely different, sphere. But when you say Willis Reed, you think of inspirational. And it had to be. If you've been at war with Dirk by your side since November or October, you want to go back to training camp, to see him out there fighting for it, knowing how long he's been in the league, along with all these other guys who are all chasing their first ring, I mean, that's huge. And not only is it huge, but as a teammate, that he's your best player. And, man, if he's not out there, your goose is cooked anyway. So it just, there's a few layers of things that sort of elevate it even though it was a 21-11 and not a 34-15 or something that would have just been off the charts bananas, you know.
And one of the
it was 10 points in the fourth quarter though, was it not?
Yeah.
So
and ten boards in the second half.
To the occasion. Yeah, 10 boards in the entire second half.
Yeah.
It was rising to the occasion. And I will say this, that I don't know if there was a collective thought process on the part of the guys around Dirk that we have to step it up because Dirk is sick, or we have to step it up because one of the narratives coming out of game three was that they being the bench guys and the support players for this team aren't playing as well as they need to play to help out Dirk. So I don't know what the motivating factor was, but yesterday someone asked me on a SportsDayDFW.com chat if it wouldn't almost be best to have Dirk have an off night so that would force everyone else to step up. And I scoffed at the idea, and I still don't think that that's the way you would draw it up going into it. I think when you're down 2-1 and you're fighting for your life in the NBA Finals, I think the last thing that you want is your best player to have an off night. But the end result of it was that for three quarters he had an off night. He did step it up in the fourth, and then he got other help. He finally got the help, and whether it was because the troops were rallied because Dirk was sick, or if it was just guys with a lot of pride digging in and wanting to, you know, keep this thing with a realistic possibility of crossing the finish line with a championship. But that is one of the stories that comes out of last night, is that Terry stepped up, Chandler stepped up, Marion and Deshaun Stevenson. All four of those guys exceeded their scoring average through the first three games of the finals, and that was a big part of it.
Yeah, and now we're heading into the critical game five, and I know you have been doing a lot of research, as you are known for doing, and you've done some stat digging for game five, game six, and game seven, if necessary.
Hey, I've sold this hard, Rylan. I've sold this hard to Brian, by the way.
Hey, I'm ready for it. I hope it lives up to the billing.
Well, the thought process in my head, of course, and I think the thought process in everyone's head, is that tomorrow night's game is must-win for Dallas if you want to have a realistic shot of crossing the finish line with a championship. And so the question then becomes, okay, well, in the 2-3-2 format, because it's obviously a very, very applicable, it's a straight apples-to-apples comparison here. There have been, since 1985, when that format was adopted, there have been seven situations where the team that did not have home court advantage had a 3-2 series lead after five games and was going out on the road with two games to win one. Mm-hmm. So here is the history of those seven games. It was 85, the Lakers, or those seven series, I should say. 85, the Lakers, who went on the road and went to Boston and won game six to clinch the championship. In 88, Detroit was up 3-2. Went to L.A., and the Lakers were able to, by the skin of their teeth, win two games, and so the Lakers ended up bouncing back and winning two games on their home floor to take the series in seven games. And if you guys remember, that was game six when Isaiah went berserk, but then hurt his ankle, and he was limited for sure in game seven.
Right.
In 1993, you had the Bulls and the Suns, and the Bulls were up 3-2 going back to Phoenix and won game six and won the championship as the team on the road.
Mm-hmm.
1994 was Houston and New York. The Knicks were up 3-2 going back to Houston. The Rockets won games six and seven to win a championship on their home floor. The Olajuwon blocked somebody at the end of game six, and I don't remember who it was. And then the game seven was John Starks shooting 2-for-17.
Yep.
98, you had the Bulls and the Jazz. What's that? I'm sorry.
I just was laughing about old John Starks.
Poor old John Starks, 2-for-17 in game seven.
Yeah.
1998 was the Bulls and the Jazz, and that, of course, was a shot by Jordan over Brian Russell. Mm-hmm. And that was Chicago up 3-2 going out on the road and rallying from a big deficit to win game six. 2006, we all know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
2010, last year, was Boston up 3-2 going out to Los Angeles and the Lakers winning both games to win the series in seven games. So the final analysis of all that research is, of the seven times that the team without home court advantage in the 2-3-2 finals format has had a 3-2 lead after five and is going out on the road, they've actually won the championship four times.
Four times.
And they won it four times in game six.
Yeah.
And then the home team was able to rally three times and win both games to win the championship.
And in one of those three rallies, Isaiah Thomas was hampered, and in one of the other three rallies, Kendrick Perkins was knocked out.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just a little bit further research along those lines. So let us discuss, okay, the team with home court advantage goes up 3-2.
Okay.
And is going back home where they have two games to win one. It's happened 9 times. It was Boston up 3-2 against Houston in 86. In 1987, it was the Lakers up 3-2 against Boston. In 1992, it's the Bulls up 3-2 against Portland. 1996, you had the Bulls up 3-2 against Seattle. 97, you had the Bulls up 3-2 against the Jazz. 2000, you had the Lakers up 3-2 against the Pacers. 2003, you had San Antonio up 3-2 to New Jersey. 2005, you had San Antonio up 3-2 to Detroit. And 2008, you had Boston up 3-2 to the Lakers. So with those 9 examples of the team with home court advantage and being up 3-2 going back home, 8 of the 9 closed it out in Game 6. Detroit was the only team against San Antonio in 2005 to force a 7th game, and the Spurs won that.
So they were just toying with San Antonio at that point.
They're just like, or San Antonio was toying with Detroit, with them, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
So the odds are overwhelmingly against, I mean completely against so far in history, of being able to go win Game 6 and 7 on the road. But if you got the 2-to-win-1 situation, then the 7 times it's happened, 4 times the road team's actually been able to go out on the road in Game 6 and close it out.
Yeah.
The odds have actually, at least historically, the odds have ended up favoring the road team.
And when Mark was hyping this up to me earlier today, I said, you don't want, if you're Miami, you do not want to have Dirk, Terry, and the rest of them know that they're one win away from the title.
From doing it on your floor.
Right. You do not want that to happen.
I was explaining to people in the arena last night how in 06, after Terry missed the 3 at the end of that game in Game 6, I sat on the aisle back then and I hauled ass up those stairs so fast because I was not going to watch anybody dance on my floor. And then...
Yeah.
And then just a few short months ago, I got the privilege of watching the San Francisco Giants do the same thing out here on my field.
You know what? I didn't run away from that. I watched that.
I did too. It was different.
You hugged your stress.
You know why? It was just a different situation. It didn't feel like it had been
situation.
Yeah. But
in 2006 there was the feeling that something was taken from you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it happens here. And I don't have just a whole lot of recollection on it. You know, if you'll remember the 05-06 season, that was my first year on the TV broadcast. But I went back and I would do radio whenever there was national TV. And so I did all the games of that playoff run that were national TV broadcasts, and or national exclusive broadcasts, I should say. And so, you know, I was already ticked after what happened in Game 5, and then Game 6 ended the way that it did. And my recollections of it were that the game was over, we went to break. I'm pretty sure that there was an extensive profanity-laced tirade that went on during the break. I don't know, that may not come as a surprise.
Brick killed a guy.
Then there was an off-air profanity-laced tirade. There was coming back, running down the final stats very quickly and saying that we were not going to be carrying the championship presentation, the trophy presentation, that if anybody cared about that, you could go watch it on Channel 8, but we're not carrying that here.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed off the air and said, and turned it over to Coop for the rest of the post game, and threw down the headset and made a beeline right out of there. And I do seem to recall that I think as I was getting up to walk to the tunnel, that's about the time that Stern was being introduced by whomever was on the podium for ESPN ABC back then. Mm-hmm. And my recollection of it is a thunderous amount of venom and booze raining down on Stern. Mm-hmm. When that happened,
you hear the scars. You hear the scars in your voice and me retelling my stories, and you know, we don't suit up, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I know, man.
this is what has happened to the fan base, and really this is what sort of begins as a seed and grows into trees named One and Done Boys and all these other things, is these years of having to accept sort of the shortcomings.
Trees of verbal hashtags.
Trees of verbal hashtags. A veritable forest. And you need an angry crowd of Visigoths to come tear that forest down.
Jeez.
I love the Visigoth that's starting to work its way into our consciousness right now.
Yep.
So I don't get to listen to the Ticket post game show with you, but apparently Ryland was saying you were in rare form last night.
I was just fired up.
That's, you know, it was right after the game. Emotions were high, and my point was that I thought in game three, and I'm not trying to be insulting to the crowd, okay? I don't want people killing me over that. It was not what I hoped for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And having been in Portland and been in Oklahoma City in this playoff run and knowing the bloodlust we should have around here for these guys because of what happened 5 years ago and the general disdain that I think everybody has for how the Heat were formed on this go around with the decision and everything.
I mean, they got a doucher.
I had these hopes and visions that the crowd on for all these three home games, what I wanted to see on Sunday was, and maybe this is unrealistic on my part, maybe this shows why I have a couple of screws loose, but I wanted to see just a combination of some sort of just Christians going into the lion's den from biblical times meets Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, meets the black hole of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum during a Raider game, you know, where people are dressed up like Darth Vader and just, you know, I wanted to see, and I think I got on this roll of, you know, that people, we needed savages, we needed barbarians, we need Visigoths, we need Mongols, you know, that's what we needed. And so, yes, I was fired up last night. And you know what? I thought in game three, the crowd was loud in a reactionary way. And so it wasn't like they were all sitting on their hands and not doing anything. Yeah, they got loud. But I thought it was more of the, as I've heard Sturm say, the perpetual wall of sound. It wasn't completely there last night, but it was a lot closer to it. And I thought that there was a lot more passion and frenzy to the whole feel of it last night. And I thought it significantly exceeded game three in that regard. And so that's why I was so fired up about it last night, and will continue to be. Hey, it needs to be even more of that tomorrow. So,
yeah, I fully expect it to escalate tomorrow with everybody being aware of what hangs in the balance of a fifth game in a 2-2 series, and coming off a win, and then the situation with Dirk being sick, and still coming back from a fourth quarter deficit, and you know all the things. It's kind of a snowball gaining momentum down the hill at this point in terms of the fan frenzy. So. Certainly, I expect that it's going to be pretty wild scene out there tomorrow.
Boys, we can see the summit of the mountaintop right
yep.
now.
It's there.
You can, you know, we have climbed high enough up the mountain that we can now see the summit, but we ain't there yet.
Is there an In-N-Out burger at that summit?
Hey, if that's what will help them get to the top, then by all means, there's an In-N-Out burger at the summit.
I have to,
and we'll be able to replenish our oxygen tanks there after we've made this climb to such lofty heights, and we'll plant a flag for the good old US of A, and we'll plant a good old Dallas Mavericks flag too if we get to that summit.
You paint such a pretty picture. That's just vivid imagery right there.
It's part of the job description.
It will be our Neil Armstrong. It will be our collective as a Maverick fan base Neil Armstrong moment. That's what it will be.
Yeah. So it's all going to depend on what happens tomorrow. Is it tomorrow?
It's tomorrow. Brian is like, he's executing the flow offense in terms of just living. Like he just, wherever he's got to be next, he just shows up there.
Just point me where I got to go.
He hasn't looked at his watch in 4 days. Whatever. He showers wearing his tennis shoes.
He is cranking out stories and stories for MavsFastBreak.com.
I'm not listening
to the Mavs Outsider Report. Tracking down audio for Ben and Skin, tweeting. You know what am I missing?
Tweeting,
Brian?
Tweeting full transcripts. Oh, he's refusing to listen because he doesn't like to be
I'm
bragged
not listening
on.
Listening to praise.
He doesn't like to be bragged on. So you're exactly right. He's multitasking. He's holding down five or six different roles here, and executing them all very well. And that uh, That requires you. You're digging in, man. It's the finals, right? You're digging in.
You're digging in. You know what you're doing? Somebody tweeted me this quote a couple of days ago after the Game 3 loss. General George S. Patton, fire until you run out of ammunition and then dig in.
Yep.
And that's what the Mavs got to do. So yep. I think that, you know, like I said, all the stuff that I ran down, history says that if you are going to go out on the road for Game 6 and 7, then you need to be 3-2 going into it. Now that doesn't mean, you know, history doesn't always hold true. And they could lose the game, and then in the first 3 minutes of Game 6, LeBron and Dwayne Wade could go after a loose ball and run right into each other's noggins and knock themselves unconscious. But, you know, that's not realistic.
One can only wish. You know, I'm just saying.
The bottom line is history tells us that if the Mavs want a realistic shot, not some sort of divine intervention, but a realistic shot of winning the series on the road in Game 6 or 7, whatever the case may be, then they got to go up 3-2. They got to be up 3-2 going into, you know, they got after tomorrow night. Yeah. So,
and I told you,
and there is at least some, not in any of the situations that I outlined, but there is some examples of a Game 7 in the finals being won by the road team, because there have been 17 NBA Finals Game 7s, and the road team has won 3 times. But that was all a long time ago. Boston in 69 at the Lakers, Boston in 74 at Milwaukee, and Washington in 79 against Seattle.
Looking at a lot of that leads me to just kind of a random question here, but looking into a lot of the history now of the way finals have played out over the decades and everything, and there was a visual somewhere that basketballreference.com had linked to that showed titles by franchise and all this. It's really peculiar how in the 1970s, the NBA seemed to be, in terms of who was winning, very out of step from every other decade. It seems like every other decade was dominated by just a handful of franchises winning almost all the titles, if not all the titles. And then you look at the 70s, other than like the mid-50s with franchises that are now defunct winning a title here or there, the 70s is the only decade that has little onesies in it, other than the Miami one here from 5 years ago. Just really bizarre.
Yeah, the 70s were the decade of democracy in the NBA.
And
because it was, let's see what, Milwaukee won one, the Knicks won two, the Celtics won two.
Washington, Seattle.
The Lakers got one in there. Washington and Seattle each had one. Portland had one, and Golden State had one.
Man, they were just giving them away at the turnpike, I guess.
It's just, and then that's
just handing
them
out like they were in and out burger.
There you go.
Like that.
It's ironic, but also fitting that's also where you see some of these statistical exceptions in terms of how series play out when you're, because you don't see a lot of stats out there about what teams do. This is the time of year when you get into that, and it just, it's weird to me and kind of cool that those eras intersect when we're talking about outliers happening in the same decade when the other outliers happen. So,
sure,
kind of cool.
Well, yeah. It is cool, and man, I can't wait for tomorrow night. You know, these games are just such an amazing investment of your physical and emotional and mental energy. And as we, I know you guys got to run, but I would like to add, though, as we're executing the flow offense a little bit, that it is amazing to think how the three of us, for example, how invested we are in this thing, and how all of us were down on Monday, and how I'm sure that we were all on cloud nine today, and we're just watching the game or reporting on it or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Think of what a mental and physical and emotional drain it is to play in it and then to come out on the wrong end of it like Dallas did on Sunday, and then 48 hours later to put away all those feelings of disappointment and then be able to ratchet up your physical, mental, and emotional gears again and those motors again and try to push them to at a level that's just a tiny bit higher, because the level that they were at Sunday left you just a little bit short, just left you ever so short, and then 48 hours later, you can get your body and mind and spirit, for that matter, all of it, the whole thing, the whole package, you can get all of that to perform at that level again. And it is, to me, a testament to the abilities of those guys. I don't think we understand nearly enough what it takes to be able to compete and perform successfully. And obviously, you've done something pretty damn good if you've gotten your team to the NBA Finals. I just don't think we have any idea what a true testament it is to the abilities of those guys, of all those things, body, mind, and heart and soul and all that business, to be able to do that and to turn right back around and do it tomorrow night and to turn back around and do it again on Sunday.
That's what it's going to boil down to, and I've been consistent. I'm not scared. It's happening in six.
I've refused to make a mark. I don't know if you caught this in the conversations we've had.
Are you there?
Did we lose him?
No, he's there. Are you there?
Sorry about that.
Rylan's
lay out on me?
No, Rylan's trying to be multitasking.
We're doing a little pre-break tweaking, and we tweaked the wrong thing.
Did you hear my point, or did I?
No, we got you.
We got you.
You're good.
Well, I thought the call had dropped. I thought that you guys were trying to be funny, and that you were just like so overwhelmed by my soliloquy.
To be funny because we couldn't execute the actual comedy piece.
There was a ticket layout going on.
Yeah. No, nothing like
well,
that.
I guess I don't know. Did all that make sense, or was I just whistling?
No,
Dixie?
It makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had a good follow up point. Forgot it now though.
But that's okay.
You'll remember it about 11:30 tonight. We'll just tweet it to me tonight.
We'll get it taken care of.
This is done in six. That's all I got
to
say.
Oh, it was my refusal to make predictions, Mark. We haven't really covered this with you since this happened, but prior to game six in Portland, Brian and I had a show. And I never do this. I never sit on the fence. It's not becoming of someone who wants people to listen to them talk about sports to sit on the fence. And I never do. But that day, I just had it. I was like, I can't make a prediction. It's a road game. I don't know what's going to happen. And obviously, it turned out. And so I have literally not predicted anything since then. So I have no forecast. I have nothing.
I don't mind that. I don't have any problem with that at all. I don't think that you have to make predictions.
I got nothing.
Because all a prediction is what did my dad used to call? He used to call it a swag. Are you familiar with that?
Stupid wild ass guess, right?
Stupid wild ass guess. Yep. There you go.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's what my dad used to call predictions.
I got swag something different.
That's
true. Yes. Swag also is an abbreviation for something else. But yes, growing up, stupid wild ass guess is the first thing I learned. I learned that before I learned it was shit we ain't got.
So. There you go. There it is.
That's another good one. In the same realm of those, I don't know if you guys if y'all caught the one that I gave on Twitter.
I love our chats, man. These are so much fun. Yeah.
That's what we do. You know, we're just here to flow.
Executing the flow offense, man.
There you go.
The one that I rolled out on Twitter in that same vein was the Wasp, which was the wild ass Stevenson possession.
Oh.
And I was just saying, okay, you know, more than 1 to 1.5 wasps per game is when I start to get into the Tums territory. And, you know, we didn't have that last night. And it was the biggest key before we let you go, Mark, the point you made last night that was very, very telling. And I think is, an encouraging sign for Mavericks fans. And we talked about guys stepping up with Dirk being not himself. Other than Stevenson being the outlier, the other guys really just did what they do. They didn't go completely unconscious and have a Nick Van Exel 40-point game. You know, they just simply executed what they've been expected to execute for the entire year. They did it well. They did it at the right times in the game. And other than Stevenson knocking in those three balls, everybody else was, you know, right in line with expectations, and the balance was there, and it worked out. And if you take that same game with a normal Dirk and the fact that both the offensive rebounding problems and the turnover problems were overcome in the second half of the game, you have a pretty good Maverick basketball game there to build off of.
Yeah, you know, Dirk is the Superman of this thing, but nobody else needs to, I don't think anyway, go into the phone booth and come out with a Superman cape on and have this extraordinary out-of-body experience. They just need to do what they've been doing. And that's Jason Terry scoring up in the high teens and Barea around 10 and Chandler being a threat for a double-double. Doesn't mean it has to happen every night, but at least being a threat for a double-double and Marion doing what he's been doing. So I don't think it takes – you know, Miami's great defensively, and they certainly are a part of the reason why the Maverick role players haven't performed up to par in a couple of games in the series, but I don't think it would take superhuman efforts by these guys. I just think it will take doing the things that got them to this point in the first place.
That's it. It's as simple as that.
That's it, and that's
what it really is.
That's what they need to do tomorrow. Big game, pivotal game.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, we certainly appreciate having you jump on, as always. It's always fun. You never know what's going to get addressed.
There you go. That's why we call this the flow offense. So
that's right.
We've learned well from Coach Carlisle. I don't know if he'd be pleased with the results of our flow offense, but at least we seem like we have a clue how to execute it.
Our disposition is fantastic.
Disposition is outstanding.
That's right. We do bring disposition. We do bring disposition and some energy, and as my former TV partner used to say, we bring some orneriness.
There you go, too. So we appreciate the time, Mark. Have a good night, and get ready for a big one tomorrow.
All right, we'll talk to you boys tomorrow. See you later.
All right, see ya.
Thanks, bud.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get back into this finals-ish, and that's coming up after the break, Mavericks Outsider Report.
TJBC's blowing up.
Yep. Biggest thing, itty bitty girl. Caught her up, and she made me feel right. Wish the bliss could never take flight. Man, we got some insanity up in here.
Everything just happens like crazy all at once. So, over the weekend, I had...
Story time.
An old patio. I had when I moved into this house, I had an additional patio poured around the existing one that was tiny. It was crappy. It didn't work. My wife's making hand gestures. What's going on? What is happening to this show? Okay, so... Anyway, I needed to get it ripped out and replaced, and I finally decided this year to go ahead and do it. So I had some guys come out to tear it up, jackhammer the whole thing. I rented a big old dumpster and had them throw all the concrete in this dumpster. And it's one of these places where you call the place, they deliver the dumpster, and then whenever you're done with it, you call them back and they come and get it. Well, but it might take them a couple days to get out to get the dumpster, and it's been a couple days. Well, they just showed up right now in the middle of our last segment, which is why my phone rang, then the doorbell rang, then the dog barked, then the doorbell rang, then the dog barked, then my wife went to the door, then we ended the segment. And then Brian had to move his car because he was blocking the access to the dumpster.
It happens.
And that's how we got where we are today.
And now we're moving on.
And now we're moving on because it's the Mavericks Outsider Report. By the way, Mark Folliwell just called us on the Del Rio VSSI / El Taco H hotline. You too can be just like Mark and call us and talk ball. We don't have it slotted in the show to take calls.
That's the epitome of the flow offense.
Because
right
calls, honestly, are my kryptonite on sports radio, but I understand that we're not sports radio. We're a podcast. It's different. We love to interact with our listeners anytime we can get a chance because we know most of you are podcasting and maybe not able to listen live, but the handful that are, we want to interact with you. 214-317-4787. Call us. Throw us a curveball. We're producerless. We're screenless. We are ruthless. So, Brian... We were talking earlier today. We're saying, you know, what are we going to do in terms of the remainder of the show? We've got Mark. We've got
first,
to talk about
I
game
said,
four.
Where are we going?
Yeah. He was like, what day is it? And
where are my pants?
We found ourselves here. And I said, well, rather than break down each individual game, because you're starting to see the themes of different games come together, let's break it down in terms of places that we see, besides the obvious, what's D-Wade doing, what's Dirk doing, what's LeBron doing, what's Jet doing, what's Matrix doing, what's Chandler doing, what's Bosch doing. Let's look at it from sort of the other key points in the game. And the first one, Brian, that we wanted to hit was what I call the nightly beatings.
Okay.
And I didn't have time to pull the Bill Cosby himself.
Me and my wife, Camille.
Yeah, exactly. Where he says that his kids, basically, he has to go through the same thing with them every night about trying to get them to take a bath and all this other stuff and go to bed. And he's like, every night they have to, it's like they can't go to bed without their beating. And that's what the Mavericks, in every game this series, all four games, they can't finish the game without their beating. And they negated it to the greatest degree in game four.
Right.
But it still occurred and got them, helped to get them in a position where they eventually did find themselves in a hole. But the nightly beatings, Brian, are A, allowing offensive rebounds, B, committing turnovers,
mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about turnovers. I'm talking about stupid turnovers. Turnovers in the backcourt, which lead to
dunks
by
Doucher
and
Wade,
wheelchair boy. Okay. So it is kryptonite.
I say Doucher, but I respect LeBron as a player.
Oh, he's great. He's a great player. He's incredibly talented.
It's the finals. You got to hate him.
I just don't like him. Yeah. And I don't have to. I like the Mavericks. Deal with it. So it's total. We can go with the turnovers first. It's just total Armageddon unto oneself to turn the ball over in that area because those guys are releasing immediately. They have good hands. They're quick. They can handle. They have all the athleticism and all the skill required to do everything they need, and there's two of them. Right. So if one of them's making the play, the other one's releasing. If somebody else is making a play, they're both releasing. And they cover so much ground. It reminds me of early Jason Kidd or early Tony Parker, guys that could go baseline to baseline so fast, except these guys are bigger, stronger, jumpier, springier, dunkier, dunkatocious, just craziness. Ooh. And it kills you. And it's not just
– Does it kill you dead?
It kills you straight up dead.
Okay.
It was Pandelirium. I thought we'd be killed or even worse, which I don't have on here.
Oh.
But it does, and it's not just dunks or 2 points. I get that, and I do kind of old school, old man sports fan does kind of ascribe to that point, but there is something to be said for style points, especially when you're on the road. And those first two games, it was absolutely crippling to the Mavericks to be giving those up. Not only are you giving up an opportunity to get a shot up, you're giving the other team an opportunity to get a shot up, and it's usually easy.
What you saw in the first two games, what I remember right away, is especially seeing the Mavericks really thrive with their ball movement, their flow offense, like we like to say. I remember especially in the Oklahoma City, Oklahoma City series, the ball was just moving side to side. It was pinpoint and everything like that. And that was happening in the first few games against Miami. But the thing was, Miami was there. They were right there. They were swarming and everything. So at that point, you're like, whoa, this is a legit defense. And at that point, I think the defense started to get in the head of
exactly.
the Mavericks. And I think back to that turnover in Game 3 with Dirk at the top of the key, basically spinning around, and he's ready to go to Marion. Kind of a miscommunication there. Marion needs to stay at the corner, even though he's probably not going to shoot the three, but he's slashing to the lane. They're trying to adjust on the fly based off of what's going on with that defense, but they're probably overthinking it.
Well, and I agree, and I think they're also tending to rush things a little bit.
Right.
I talked about that in the first segment relative to what Dirk's doing, but I think the team in general on offense, they did get a little bit taken out of their rhythm by Miami having the defense and the personnel that they have that are so talented. And if there's anything I'm going to give tons of credit for to what Miami's doing and doing well in this series, in addition to role players, which we're going to move on to in a minute, it's obviously Wade being Wade, and it's just their team defense. I mean, they have the guys that are just long enough and just athletic enough. They don't have a slew of big men, but they got a whole lot of guys who are in that tweener size, long arms, and athletic, and can recover and get into passing lanes and bother people's shots or cut off angles. Just cut off angles for passes or angles for looks at passes. I mean, it's pervasive on the entire defensive end of the court for them. And so obviously, sure, that's going to have some effect on what Dallas is able to do. And, you know, it's just so critical because of what they can then do to turn those into easy points. You can't let it happen. And I think that as the series wore on, especially in games 2 and 3, there became a lot more, because of the mental aspect of it that you brought up, unforced errors happening. And they started the game off in game 4 the same way. Jason Kidd had 3 turnovers in the first 4 minutes.
I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just spitting the bits, the fart and fall down offense. And although he didn't fall down, but that's basically what it was.
Not sure if he farted.
He could have. You never know. You never know about these things. They keep those things kind of quiet. But yeah, that's the key. That's been the beating, and it's encouraging that the Mavs turned it around. And the offensive rebounds is the other side of this coin.
Right.
Same thing. The reason I group them together, one, is because they've been the two worst things that have been happening to Dallas. Two, they are a result of Miami being different than the other teams they've faced. It's a little different. Athleticism obviously plays a huge part, but D-Wade on the offensive boards isn't capable of doing a whole lot more than what Russell Westbrook was able to do on the offensive boards, but he's smarter, and more grown up.
He's just a
and
veteran.
So he's doing it more often. He knows when to do it. He knows how to get in there. He's not just relying on crazy athleticism, but he's mirroring that crazy athleticism alongside what he's got in his head. And it's brutal when he can get in there and he can sneak in there when you've got position on their bigs. I use the term loosely.
Mm-hmm. Air quotes.
And he, you know, and he comes in over the top and is still able to get a hand in there and get the ball. But then you've got guys like Joel Anthony just playing good ball, man. Mm-hmm. Just sneaking
sound.
In there, super sound, not being kind of slimy and shifty and being able to scoot in there and be in the right spot and then not letting Dallas get a body on him. And you really can't even blame Dallas's zone. I think it's just they've been just as bad when they're in man. It's mm-hmm. just their mental acuity for closing that possession out has not been there. They were unable to adjust to what Miami brought to the table personnel-wise that was making that happen.
It's frustrating just in the logical sense of you're just giving this team extra possessions when you can clearly see these games are not going to get into the triple digits. You're lucky if it gets to 95, 96. So when the possessions are going to be that low and you're giving a team as talented as Miami even more possessions, mm-hmm. you're putting yourself behind the eight ball in the sense that they're going to cash in, or you're wearing yourself out defensively, which is something you can't afford to do. But something clicks when they're behind and the deficit is just right there and something just happens. I don't know what it is, but they just click.
Even with that problem, they've been able to fight back from getting down. But you're getting into the point in the series now where you don't want to find yourself down anymore. So that takes us to our next one on the list of the big three here of aspects.
Shots?
And that's guard play.
Oh, I'm lost.
Guard play.
Okay.
Guard play going into this series, going into this playoff run was one of the biggest things we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It hadn't been that great over the balance of that last little bit of the season. Kid looked worn out. Jet was kind of going through some issues. Barea was your guy you had the most confidence in. And then obviously, you know, Stevenson is a role player, mm-hmm. and his role is very, very specific. And expectations were exceeded in Portland by Jet and Kidd versus L.A. by
Barea,
Jet, and all of them.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma City, Jet kind of started to tail off mm-hmm. finally, shooting percentage-wise, but not so precipitously that anybody was really calling for his head or anything, and then Barea was still killing it, and Kidd
was the hoss defensively and just making timely plays.
And now what happens when you get to the finals here against Miami, you go into it, and we sat here and said, well, other than Wade, who cares about their guards?
Yeah.
And
Chalmers is the one that's been the surprise in the sense that he just drills clutch shots.
Chalmers has blown up on the at least for the first three games, and Bibby has exceeded expectations as well.
By
not
playing
that he's,
more than 2 minutes.
By looking like a basketball player. Meanwhile, you know, Jet has had two stretches. Well, really, he's had three stretches. He had the first half of the first game.
Mm-hmm.
He had the fourth quarter of game two. And he had the fourth quarter of game four. Although, really, his first half of game four wasn't horrible.
He had seven points
in the first half. And it wasn't like he was clanging a lot, but
should have been more, missed some free throws.
That's the thing. Yeah. So, but you know, other than that, it's just the kid has just been, and obviously he has a very tall defensive task, but you know, his offensive production has been way down. And then Barea is just butt puckered, man. I mean, I have totally bought into the Barea thing. I mean, a couple years ago, I was down on him, but I applaud Rick for having stuck with him. And what you've developed is an incredibly serviceable backup point guard. We've talked about this the last several shows with the way he's been playing in the playoffs. But he is just awesome. I love the guy. But, man, there's no other explanation for what's happening in this series to him because of the shots that he's failing to finish around the rim. It has to just be a mental thing.
We're going to have to see what happens because when I talked to him today, he realized that I just got to make those layups.
Yeah.
But he knows the approach is the same, whether he's starting or coming off the bench. It's just about bringing the energy, aggressiveness, so on and so forth. So he has the right mental approach. It's just got to translate on the court. And he's due for a game. I mean, he had it in L.A. like we talked about, kind of wishy-washy in Oklahoma City, but he had his moment. So it's time to really man up.
Yeah, and the thing with him is that if you look at the way he was able to get to the rim in Game 4, and really he had a couple opportunities early in the other games as well, but Game 4 really, he could have easily had an 11- or 12-point game if he has his normal J.J. making an uncontested layup or a slightly contested layup, and it just didn't happen. As far as candidates for finally getting off the schneid and having a big game, I think Jet's due for that. I mean, he's a streaky player. We know that. He's been our guy for 7 years. We know all about his ups and downs. He's a completely open book. Everything that could possibly have been said about him has been said.
Anything he can say, he has said.
Absolutely. He is 100% due to at least have one game. He's done it before. He hasn't been awful yet. That's the thing, is that he caught a lot of flack in the last two San Antonio series in the playoffs in 09 and 10 of just being awful. But even in this game, even in this series, he hasn't been awful. He's either just been – he had the matchup situation with LeBron that kind of just took him out of the game, but he's just missing open shots.
Yeah.
And missing open shots is a problem that all these guys have had, and it's other than the first two things we just discussed, the number one thing that has prevented Dallas from playing a full on Dallas game that you go, okay, they played a good game, that just not knocking down open shots.
I think the thing that's probably promising or taking an optimistic stance is early in the series when you saw LeBron checking Terry, you're like, what's going to happen? And then when he took shots, they didn't look like good shots at all. Now you're seeing the shots, it just looks like there's a lid on the rim. They're going in, but they just find a way to go out. So I think
he had two last night late in the game that were literally in and out.
Yeah. So you're seeing he's making the adjustments with that. He's making the adjustments by, yeah. What are those again?
Peanut butter pretzels.
Delicious.
We have a new tradition. We have to eat something during each show, and I have to chew it on the mic.
Yeah, so he's found his niche in that sense to figure out what he has to do, and he's being aggressive now, too. Where you saw he was driving on LeBron in Game 4, especially in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I felt like Game 4... Do you remember how going into the playoffs we had these fears, and then Yeah, sure. We saw him in Portland. And in Portland, we had this sense that he was playing very, very heady within himself. He was pretty delicious, Dirk, although that's kind of weird, your dudes. But he was just kind of picking his spots and kind of getting into the mid-range game and finding open areas on the floor to get shots off and not just waiting for a three-point opportunity to happen. Or taking a contested fadeaway, going to his right with two guys running at him, which he does sometimes tend to do even if they go in. Last night, Game 4, was the first game in the finals where I felt that same kind of game from him. He started off the game early getting a steal, jumping somebody, passing lane, I can't remember who it was, jumping out into the passing lane, getting the ball, and obviously getting possession. And that was something that he had done earlier in the playoffs. You saw, like you said, taking to the rim. He got lucky on a couple shots. He had the push shot.
That was the end of the shot clock.
With the shot clock expiring and all those things, which helped get him going, I'm sure. But his mental approach in Game 4 seemed to be a little more in line with what you would have expected him to have been doing all along. So that's a good thing. But as far as Kidd goes, moving to the final guard, the final scoring guard, if you will, or offensive-minded, because he doesn't score. I don't know what you can really expect out of him. He's got his hands so full defensively, and he's still able to orchestrate. Even though his assist numbers weren't that great last night, you still see his impact on the floor game. You just want him to knock down a couple open threes.
He's not getting a whole lot of looks, though.
No, he's really not. He's only getting like two or three a game.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's probably the one that you're not counting on the most in that sense, because like we just said, they're not there. The opportunities aren't going to be there a whole lot. You know, he's not going to be driving to the lane or anything like that. He's just got to keep plugging away, basically trying to execute the offense and then just bear down on defense as best as he can.
Well, and he has the other assignment on the other end of the court, and that kind of puts him in a different position than J.J. and Jet. J.J. and Jet, if they're not, there you go. Mm-hmm. That was almost like a sound clip, like a sound bite. We could probably sell that. If J.J. and Jet aren't scoring, J.J. can still distribute. I mean, he has two roles, mm-hmm. you know, being both backup two and backup point sometimes, but or backup two sometimes, and obviously always backup point, but misworded that. Got the order of those wrong. But, you know, Kidd doesn't have that luxury of just being that unitasker, to borrow a phrase from Alton Brown. He has got his hands completely full. You saw him a lot on Wade late in the game the other night with Stevenson in there checking LeBron. And even when Marion's in there checking LeBron again, you know, he and whoever is in there at that three spot, they're going to switch freely, and he's going to be on Wade or he's going to be on LeBron. And if he's not on one of those two, there's an ugly mismatch somewhere that Dallas doesn't want any part of. So he's got to keep all that in mind. It's disappointing, obviously, because he's such a good player. It'd be great to just get 8 points out of the guy, but I just don't know what you're going to get anymore.
And at this point, I'm not hating on him by any stretch of the imagination. I know the turnovers are frustrating and stuff like that, but he's got his hands full. I understand the struggles on offense that he's going to have, because defensively through the playoffs, maybe not so much against Brandon Roy, because Brandon Roy had that game with no knees and he just exploded. But against Kobe, Durant, Westbrook, he's gone up against the best the league has to offer, and he's held his own. So eventually, mixing that with the fact that he's 38, eventually something's got to give on one side of the court. So I can understand defensively he's trying, offensively.
Defensively, he has the job that no one that he has to carry that torch. There's other guys that are going to score, and he can still distribute. So that's just how it's going to be. The third and final of this reflection upon the Mavericks and Heat matchup here in the NBA Finals, the third and final point that we wanted to cover, role players. It's crunchy. Mm-hmm. Prior to Game 4, really even in Game 4, really for all four games, well, no, prior to Game, there was one guy in Game 4. Mavericks role players, and when I say role players, I mean Stevenson, Barea, Peja, Big Wood,
Cardinal.
Mm-hmm. Jet comes off the bench, but he's not a role player. None of those guys, although Stevenson had done everything you'd ask of him, but he was short minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. The rest of those guys, Big Wood, non-factor now. He was fine when he was there, but the injury makes him a non-factor.
My hip.
So it really came down to Peja, Barea, Cardinal. Peja and Cardinal is Cardinal. Peja and Barea were not doing anything near what they were supposed to be doing. And to make things worse, on the other side, you had Chalmers, you had Haslam, you have Anthony.
Miller, occasionally.
Miller was on par with Barea, mm-hmm. really. They have more role players because they have three superstars, so they have a lot more guys that you throw in that role player category. But time and again, those role players, particularly Anthony, Haslam, and Chalmers, straight up delivering every time it was required in those first three games. The Mavericks obviously escaped with a miraculous comeback in game two, which is just historical in terms of happening in the NBA Finals. But in all of those games, Haslam's knocking down open jumpers, technically sound D, grabbing boards. Anthony's all of a sudden an elite shot blocker.
Juwan Howard is playing. He's alive.
Juwan Howard has a pulse. But Anthony is active. He's part of he's the main culprit for your offensive rebound bonanza that's attacking the Mavericks. So he's going off, and then freaking Chalmers is just dropping in threes like nobody's business. And really, you can even qualify Bibby as a role player. Because of the way LeBron handles and distributes, he's a role player. Neither he or Chalmers, one, does a whole lot of running the offense, because LeBron's out there, he's only resting 5 or 6 minutes a game. So even Bibby was knocking down open shots in games 2 and 3. Game 1, he was pretty meh. So point being, I just listed all these guys that were rising to the moment, rising to the occasion, and that was not happening for Dallas. And then finally in Game 4, Dallas had Stevenson, one guy, pick up the slack. Barea became a little bit, obviously Peja played himself completely out of the rotation.
He's getting ready for his birthday.
But now you have Cardinal, who's just going to be a completely different expectation than what Peja was.
The thing what I like about Cardinal is that obviously he's going to bring you that tough defense. He's that kind of defense, tough as nails. He's going to bring you that defense. He's fundamentally sound. The thing is, he can spread the floor, but he's not going to have the respect of Miami's defense like Peja would.
Oh, I totally agree.
So the fact that he can drill a three, if needed, is another plus for you offensively in that sense. So I really like, if this sticks with Peja going down and Cardinal coming up, there's upside on both sides of the floor.
And it should. And our final segment, we're going to look forward, and part of looking forward is we're going to talk to each other about what was different in Game 4.
We're not going to talk to the wall?
No. Okay. I'm going to talk to you, and you're going to talk to me. And Brian Cardinal's a big part of what I believe was different in Game 4. But yeah, you're exactly right that role players in the way that they stepped up for Miami in the first three games, Stevenson obviously exceeded his expectations in Game 4. But other than that, really Miami's guys, Anthony still had a good early game. He got in there and altered some shots and grabbed some O-boards. Finally, the Mavericks halted the parade to the offensive glass for Miami, which was nice, but you know, Haslam had a couple opportunities to hit some shots late in the game.
Haslam's a good defender, man.
And they didn't go in. But he didn't make the big shot. Right. Chalmers was a non-factor, and Bibby was a non-factor. So finally, those guys didn't all deliver all at once. And Dallas, because of that, was able to win the game with a sick Dirk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you take that game and you put a healthy Dirk on top of it, like we were telling Mark, and you put the second half in terms of taking care of the ball and protecting your defensive glass, you have a very complete game from Dallas there in that. So generally speaking, you finally saw the tide turn, but the role players of Miami have completely won this series at this point.
Up until Game 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and they're still definitely ahead, and it's part of what's gonna come down to is if those guys can continue to deliver, because Miami needs those points from guys like Chalmers and Haslam, and even Bibby.
If they don't get it, then that just plays into the hands of the Dallas bench. But like we said, the second unit for the Mavs took care of it in Game 4. Have to build on that for Game 5 moving forward. But we're going to take a break from the finals right now.
Yeah, and we're going to actually take a spin around the NBA. For your weekly or semi-weekly during the playoffs installment of NBA Nuggets. There's a lot to talk about. Like we said, we can go around the league and knock down a few things because...
so much so I thought of something, but I forgot it already.
Yeah, that's okay because we have plenty. So we're going to take a quick break here. Mavericks Outsider Report from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. And on the other side of the break, NBA Nuggets.
Analysis.
That wasn't heard.
Sweet. Okay. Just saw this tweet, Rylan.
What was it?
NBA Finals averaging 15.5 million viewers through four games on ABC, the biggest audience in 7 years.
How about that? I'd love to say that's a crunchy nugget. I'd love to say that was due to the Mavericks and Dirk's awesomeness, but we all know that that's a LeBron thing, man.
People want to see him fail, too.
They do. They do. And count me in that group. So
one of 15.5.
We're going to, yeah, that's what we're going to be focusing on here for the next week or so. However, first, here at the Mavericks Outsider
These
Report.
These are delicious.
They are good, dude. Yeah. I got them at Sprouts. If there's a Sprouts around you, around y'all, it's kind of a frou-frou-y kind of grocery store, actually. It's got a lot of organic stuff.
Like a Whole Foods?
Yeah, it's probably like a little brother to Whole Foods, but they have a really extensive section with all kinds of stuff you can scoop out.
So how is this an organic place that sells peanut butter flavored pretzels?
They may be organic. We don't know.
Okay.
But they have a lot of this like dry goods kind of like stuff with oats and granola and raisins and trail mix and pretzels and, you know, just all that kind of peanuts and cashews and almonds and macadamia nuts. And
I'm letting you go. Keep
yada,
going.
Yada, yada.
Keep going.
And so that's where those came from, and they're freaking awesome. So
they are good.
Anyway, it's time now to take a spin around the NBA for a little bit of what we like to call the NBA Nuggets.
Birthday boy. Is this Prince?
This is Prince.
Today was his birthday.
Yesterday.
Wasn't it Allen Iverson's birthday this week or something?
Could very well be.
Practice.
How do they celebrate birthdays in Turkey? By eating pretzels.
No.
So, yeah, man, NBA Nuggets. First and foremost on the list today, we have some coaching carousel updates. I believe...
some of them are just stupid.
Since we last talked, one of the moves... Mavericks assistant head coach Dwayne Casey, who we are big fans of. If you ever watch a game, you don't see it much in the TV broadcast, but if you're there live, you're going to see Coach Casey jumping up and down like a crazy man. That guy coaches his ass off.
Mm-hmm.
He can eat whatever he wants because he's burning 4,000 calories during that game.
And he still goes to the gym.
There you go.
He still goes to the gym.
So he was in consideration for the Houston Rockets job. He did not get it, which is too bad for him because he's a good coach, and he got run out of Minnesota by Kevin Garnett, which was bullsh, and all the more reason to not respect Kevin Garnett. But
he just sweats too much.
And he sweats a lot, and he yells a lot. And he made a commercial bragging about 20-10-5, which, remember 20-10-5 every night, 20-10-5?
I zoned him out.
About 7 or 8 years ago.
I zoned him out.
Which is, I was like, dude, you should be scoring 25. What's up? He didn't get that job. It did, however, go to a buddy of Rick Carlisle, yeah. Kevin McHale.
That was happening earlier. McHale.
So, yeah, Kevin McHale is your new Houston Rockets coach, a new division rival.
Good
there.
Good for him.
So, yeah, I suppose. I mean,
he said the random thing, I got tired of the grind. I'm sure he won't be tired in a month.
Oh, yeah, tired of the grind of being on TNT and NBA TV.
No, he got tired of the day-to-day coaching grind.
Oh,
he missed it. He missed it.
Oh, like he, I understand.
Yeah, but I'm sure a month in, he's going to be like,
screw this.
Where's the booth?
He's going to be texting Charles saying, can I come back? Or Rick Kamla. It's not a show unless you get a Rick Kamla mention. So anyway, yeah, I don't have much of an opinion on that. You know, he did coach very briefly there in Minnesota, didn't he?
No.
Just real quick.
He was a GM.
And he was the GM for sure, but I think he had a quick interim stint on the bench. I don't have a lot to say about that.
It's a decent situation to land in, though.
Oh, yeah, Houston's not in horrible, horrible shape. They've got some holes, but, you know, they can be filled.
The size of Yao Ming.
Yeah, a 7'4" Chinese hole. they also, there's news about the Pistons have fired John Keister. Shocker.
As Richard Hamilton still... making fun of him or whatever. You remember that look.
Go home.
I know, right?
That was the near mutiny around the trade deadline or whatever.
Led by Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
You know that's a bad idea.
Yeah, don't follow. Tracy McGrady, folks, Tracy McGrady is not a leader of men. Don't go down that road. Just don't even entertain it. But yeah, so no big shocker there. The other one that has ties to what's happening currently in the league... is that New York native, former New York Knicks point guard, former Indiana Pacers point guard, former Houston Rockets point guard, and maybe some others that
Did
I don't
Clippers?
Remember. Oh, yeah, and Clippers. Mark Jackson, ABC broadcast analyst and analyst.
Hand down, man down.
Mama, there goes that man.
Not a fan of his work. Not a fan of anything on let me tell you, dude.
I'm lucky that I don't get to listen
to
him.
You are incredibly lucky that you're credentialed and at the game because it's garbage. It's utter garbage. It's horrible. First of all, okay, well, first of all, Mark Jackson, Golden State Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming into a personnel situation that's like a little, like, it's almost like Don Nelson built a, it's like, imagine if Don Nelson built a house that only Nelly could build, and it was, people came and visited, and it was really awesome for one summer, and then you realized it was kind of weird, but you still kind of lived there, and then it kind of half burned down, and then now Mark Jackson's going to come live in it.
Oh. I was going to say, it sounds like you're going to the beach for a while. You enjoy it for the moment, then you realize I'm stuck at the beach.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is that Golden State is in a weird sense of flux here, much like whoever ends up being Detroit's new head coach. You got to imagine if the front office is in lockstep, there's going to be some house cleaning.
Dude hasn't even had a head coaching gig.
I know. He's never coached anywhere.
No.
So I predict flame out.
He's got a 3-year gig. I think he's done in about 2.25.
If.
I say he gets he's not getting a can in his first year.
Yeah. You never know, though. You never know what kind of contract you might have there. They might be protecting themselves and be able to buy him out or something.
But he's saying that he's going to bring a defensive mindset, and they're going to hold players accountable. And he talks about defense.
Well, that's all fine, but he's going to have to trade half the team before he can do that.
But he talks about defense and stuff on the broadcast, but he doesn't go in depth. He doesn't explain his defensive thought and say, oh, you didn't play good defense there.
If my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle.
Yes. Wow.
Exactly.
That's true.
So that's a questionable one. But the ABC broadcast is horrible. This is my sub nugget of this nugget, because Mark Jackson segued us into the sub nugget. The ABC broadcast is utter garbage.
Not Doris Burt.
I'm sure she's fine. I don't ever watch her interviews, but TNT, the presentation, even with Kevin Harlan, I would take Kevin Harlan times 10. I would take Kevin Harlan sitting in here commentating on us over the ABC presentation.
Right between us!
I can't ever get a replay when I need a replay. Van Gundy does nothing. Okay, just give Jeff Van Gundy a special spot on the rules committee, because all he does is just throw out crazy ideas for rule changes.
I remember that.
All he does, constantly. And, you know, Mark Jackson, he's harmless. He's just not really bringing a lot to the table. There's nothing about him that just, you know, bothers me, really. But, you know, I can't get replays.
Are you saying Jackson or Breen?
Jackson.
Oh, okay.
Breen needs to shut up.
Oh.
Breen needs to call the game. I think I had a hashtag for Breen the hashtag was actually for Van Gundy and Jackson when they were talking about Joakim Noah's whole thing about using epithets on the bench and getting fined and all that, and also referring back to Kobe. And they sounded like they were auditioning to replace Oprah. And
it was during a game?
Yeah, and during for like a Mavs game, for like 5 minutes, a Mavs OKC game. And I was like, guys, shut up and call the game. That was my hashtag, shut up and call the game. And I need that now for Mike Breen, because he all of a sudden is in the opinion business.
I remember you talking about
that. And I did. I tweeted something about Mike Breen being in the opinion business.
Hashtag, oh, no, you didn't.
And my thought process there is, your job is to call the game. It's bad enough having to deal with these other guys trying to give their opinions, which are sometimes abrasive. You just shut up, dude. Just seriously, just shut up, go home. Leave my TV. Don't ever come back. I wanted to look up how long ABC has the TV deal. It can't end soon enough. Please, somebody else.
Just need a new crew.
Please tell me somebody else will. But it sucked when it was Mike Tirico.
You don't like Mike Tirico?
He's okay. He's just meh to me.
Oh, okay.
Hubie
Brown?
I like Hubie.
Okay.
Hubie's cool.
Dr. Jack Ramsey? I think he's a radio guy.
Yeah, he's radio now. But, I liked it. It was even better when Bill Walton and Snapper Jones were arguing with each other for 2.5 hours every Sunday. You know, I mean, and
throw it down.
And I used to complain. I used to complain about that, but that was better than what we're getting now. It just seems, and again, the fact that I can never get a replay of something that is relevant to me because we have to watch a package of every Miami, a vignette of every Miami Heat player in their uniform strutting across the court just throws me. So I'm down on all that. Next nugget, ding. We need like a nugget like sounder, you know, like
ball.
Okay, next nugget. Pippen, Scotty, Pippen, Scotty, has been a little more publicly visible during this NBA Finals and in general playoff run than I would say he's been in several years.
For Chicago.
You know, at first he was in Chicago, and he obviously belongs there. And then since then, he's kind of been around. You know, you've seen him sitting here and there. And he's taken to, I guess, to Twitter. Is that where this came out?
Yes.
Was Twitter kind of talking about LeBron, and he was pumping LeBron up and saying LeBron had the ability to be better than Jordan and all this other stuff.
Whoops. Not so much, especially.
What?
Yeah.
No, what is he trying to do there? Is he trying to make sure that he's the best Pippen ever?
He's trying to poke it at MJ.
Or is he just, I don't know that he's poking it. I always thought those guys were still friendly.
Maybe, I don't know. There could be, I sort of see the vibe that MJ kind of said, it's all me. I was the boss, which he was, but.
Yeah, he can say whatever he wants,
but. Sorry, that's my bad.
One of Brian's ladies.
Sorry. No. But Pippen uses that.
Oh, dude, I need my hat.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about this one?
The other one, on the backside blue one.
Oh, the difficult one.
The one you can't reach. Part of it is that hat rack is, like, leaning. I need to fix it. Thanks, dude.
But Pippen is kind of sticking it to Jordan in the sense that, hey, no, I was still a part of this, and now I'm going to make it worse for you. By making myself look silly.
Well, and you know what? Pippen was huge, man. Mm-hmm. Pippen was huge back in the day. He defended four spots on the floor. And he basically, he's the reason why the triangle offense worked the way it did. Because he could distribute and they could have, you know, Steve Kerr or B.J. Armstrong or John Paxson or whoever spotting up.
Bill Wennington.
I mean, you look
he's
at some
a spot-up machine.
Yeah. One of the Mavs' many storied draft picks, Bill Wennington. You can look at the benches on those teams, and man, it was Jordan and Pippen. And the earlier teams with Horace Grant and Cliff Levingston, those guys were stronger than the later teams. Some of those later teams with Jordan, Pippen, and Robin and Kukoc. I mean, yeah, Jordan, Pippen, Robin, Kukoc, Ron Harper, Steve Kerr. I mean, Steve Kerr was literally, you know, number six. And obviously Luke Longley was taking up space, serviceable. But it was, I mean, weak, weak, weak. So Pippen, I've always been a Pippen backer, a Pippen supporter because of things like that, but I don't know that he needs to be pumping LeBron up anymore. Does LeBron really need any encouragement from anyone about anything?
He doesn't need more stress on him.
I don't think so.
He doesn't need any more stress on himself right now. I mean, that guy, whoever his name was one game too early on this shrinkage factor. He
yeah.
just missed it so...
I know, man.
I mean, I really don't get what Pippen's talking about, but he's keeping himself relevant. I mean, that's good for him, at least.
You got to wonder, doesn't he have a job with the Bulls?
I think he has some affiliation with the Bulls.
But it's kind of like Greg Dreiling and Moreland Wiley had very, very short jobs with the Mavs. Maybe it's not like a big, maybe it's like a, you know, a, sort of a light-duty gig or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. But no, I don't.
He's not going to be Jordan.
Nobody's Jordan. Can we just drop it? Can we just get over it already?
Kobe is our generation's facsimile of Jordan. But there's never going to be a Jordan.
No. Let's just drop that altogether. Now, could LeBron be Scotty?
Sure.
I think absolutely.
Sure.
I think he's Scotty with even more physical skills. But there's a lot that has to go on between the ears before LeBron can make the changes he needs to make to his game and to his mental approach to be able to do that or to be able to be on that level. And not only that, but, you know, D-Wade has to maintain his level of play before LeBron finds himself. You know, what happens if D-Wade breaks down? You know, then LeBron's kind of, I don't want to say back at square one, but he's still facing this challenge. The whole psychological situation of LeBron is just an interesting one that nobody's going to get to the bottom two for several more years as this thing plays out.
It's the same as the headband and the hairline thing. That's interesting, too.
It just keeps moving.
Yeah.
Dude, just shave it. Come on.
He should. I thought about that today. He just needs to shave it.
7 out of 10 NBA players shave their head anyway. What's the deal? What are you trying to hang on to?
Maybe that's where the psychology comes into play even more.
I don't know. So, one more nugget.
Big nugget.
The final nugget.
Aw.
The big nugget.
Oh, I forgot that was the sounder.
That's
for
the
that.
Sounder for the nugget because it was right there, and now we're going to roll with it. The big Aristotle.
Mm-hmm.
The Shactus. The Diesel. Shaq Fu. Superman.
Shazam.
The original Superman. Man of Steel, rather.
Yeah.
Shazam. The big XYZ. The big whatever. Shaquille O'Neal. Has officially announced his retirement. It's a done deal.
Breaking news?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
Because it happened a while back.
Oh, my bad.
Where is my breaking news sounder anyway? Just listen to the piccolo bass while I find it.
I know. That's a good part of it, too. Oh, well.
I can't find it.
Oh,
dude.
Well. But it's late breaking news.
About a week ago, Shaq retired. It's good. The wait is good comedic timing if you have something on the other end to hold it down. So,
right.
Yeah, a week ago, Shaq retired. You somehow left him out of your all-time top 10. Why? He's Shaq, dude.
I know, but I don't know. Something didn't click. There's nothing I'll be able to explain in defense of that. Just like I can't explain how Rajon Rondo is untradeable to me. Which I still believe. But there's something to it. Oh, sorry, Prince. Oh, okay. That works, too. There's just something about it that doesn't jive with me. I know one of the reasons was Hakeem just dominated
Hakeem
him early.
Hakeem killed him.
Early. So if you got that going against you, I'm not... That's no knock on Hakeem, but there's something like that just rubs me the wrong way, too.
He's just so dominant.
He's top 15. I'll put him top 15 for sure.
Well, you know, I mean, for me, he was top 10, and Hakeem was just knocking on the door. He was, I don't know, he and Hakeem are that's a great debate.
We can't get into this again.
No.
No.
But he and Hakeem, that's where this all thing kind of comes down for people, and that's why I wanted to talk about this, because talking about Shaq brought up a lot of writing about Hakeem, and also talking about Dirk brought up a lot of people writing about Hakeem because he was the last guy to be the only superstar on his team that won a title. And so those two things kind of running concurrently in my brain really got me thinking about Hakeem. He was a bad man. This is a man who probably didn't pick up a basketball until he was 15 or 16, you know, and went from nothing to just dominating Southwest Conference when he was like a sophomore, you know. So not that Southwest Conference basketball was ever any good. I don't know.
Easy to dominate.
Other than Houston back in the day, Phi Slamma Jamma days. But point being, that's a debate I would love for us to get into. But I got Shaq on top because of the dominance.
Over Hakeem?
Over Hakeem. More titles, dominance, long term. He just was a freak of nature. And Hakeem's knocking on the door. And if I ever redo my top 10, I'm going to have to put Hakeem on that bubble.
Hakeem's in my top 15, too. So,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Shaq needs to go to the TNT inside the NBA booth.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Do you
No doubt.
Now, do you hope that it's him that have been called? What did I just say? What happened?
I just had
a complete synaptic breakdown inside of my brain. I hope that it is them that have called him. He already came out and said that somebody called him literally like the next day.
Oh, really?
It totally needs to be TNT.
Someone called him to be a broadcaster?
Yeah, like they're already starting to float the idea. His insinuation was that I got a phone call. Somebody wants me to come in and be, you know, a talking head on their basketball show.
The problem?
It would be huge on TNT, man.
It would be huge, but I think you kind of run into a problem, too, of overload with Barkley and Shaq. They're going to just try to dominate the other person in that sense, and Kenny's going to be like, look at my pictures. Look at my Kenny's pictures. And then Ernie's just going to be like, what's going on here? But I would say that means Chris Webber gets out of there for sure.
Weber's been putting in a lot of time on NBA TV.
I don't watch.
I watch it when I'm like really, really, really into NBA.
They do their analysis good though.
And they have a good prison. I mean, and they share staff with TNT. You get Mikhail over there.
Bones.
Both places. Who's you don't see him on TNT though.
He should be though.
But he's good. But you get Ernie over there on NBA TV sometimes. I mean, it's an integrated presentation. So what I see happening, hopefully, is that Shaq gets pulled into that fold and that he can get some time. I don't have a problem with him with Charles. I just don't know if it'll work every Thursday for all of the season. Mm-hmm. Maybe they send Shaq out on some of their games to be
broadcasting,
not be a color man, but to be. Whenever they do a remote, you know how sometimes whenever they do their remote, mm-hmm. maybe do more of those and have Shaq there.
All-Star Weekend for sure.
With Chuck and Kenny or Chuck and Kenny, yeah. Or Shaq and Chuck and no Kenny or Shaq and Kenny, no Chuck. I imagine Chuck's going to continue to anchor it. So I don't know. I just hope they find a way to work that in. That's what I want. This NBA consumer wants to see Shaquille O'Neal on TNT. Because they do basketball right, and then Ted Turner needs to get his checkbook out and outbid AB freaking C when this current deal expires.
Yeah, I agree. Not too much I can argue on that.
Me neither, and that's why we're going to go to break.
I hope you wouldn't argue with yourself.
No. So we're going to go to break.
Okay.
And then we come back.
We're going to
touch base on where we're at for the remainder of the 2011 NBA Finals. And talk about takeaways from Game 4 and how that can be parlayed into a championship.
Maybe.
A championship.
Championship. Question mark. Hashtag. Analysis.
And in the meantime, listen to Shaq rap.
This makes me want to watch Blue Chips.
And Nick Nolte would love if you would.
Him and his crazy hair now.
A little Shaq bringing you back to the final segment here in the 32nd quote-unquote episode Air of quotes. The Mavericks Outsider Report from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center, courtesy Mavs.com, MavsFastBreak.com. Go there right now. Read my man Brian Gutierrez's work.
And Earl's.
And Earl's, of course.
Earl Case Need.
We absolutely think those guys are hustling, and they need hustling hard and working hard on those stories, so you better be reading them. They're worth it. They're worth your time, assuming you can read.
Illiterate.
And if you can't read, just put your Heat jersey back on and watch TV.
Awkward.
Yeah. So, anyway, man, we're going to wrap it up. Obviously, this is, I don't know, maybe like the most important time ever in Dallas Mavericks history.
Yep.
And so we owe it to ourselves and our listeners to look ahead at what is upcoming and what we can take from what's already gone down and how those two can be married and merged to produce two wins in the next three games.
To procreate a championship. Yeah. It's like what we've talked about. Jason Terry, he needs that game. Brian Cardinal needs to be efficient when he's on the court. J.J. Barea needs to probably get a little loose, probably however you feel like it's necessary to feel good in Game 5 going forward. Stevenson, just keep doing what you're doing. Apparently he is talking a lot of ish in the media, saying that LeBron's kind of going through the motions or coasting or not, whatever.
I don't mind our guy. Do you mind our guys talking? I mean, obviously Jet has done his normal thing, and now Deshaun came out today and said that he felt like LeBron was kind of not himself. Does that, some people are getting real bent over that. Jason, does that bother you at all?
Jason Terry does not bother me at all. I mean, Carlisle said it today, that I don't need to hear what Jason Terry is saying, but he can say what he needs to say because he knows that he has to back it up.
I think that's why he does it. I think he just that's kind of the personality he's had. He's always been that way.
Yeah. It doesn't really bother me in that sense. Deshaun is kind of new in that sense because he really hasn't been that vocal, honestly, because a lot of people haven't wanted to talk to him because he's just a guy with tattoos and a neck piercing.
that is a unique piercing.
Yeah, but he can back it up. He's got experience against LeBron. One of the things that was interesting when I was watching the replay last night was Sean Marion had this sweet dribble post move on LeBron, and I think he finished left. A left banker or a right banker, and after that they showed the slow-mo replay. And
he went over his left shoulder with the right hand from around the middle of the lane and banked it in just straight off the glass. Yeah.
And they showed the slow-mo replay, and Marion is just barking at LeBron.
Go and get it, son.
Yeah.
See, this does not bother me at all. Now, you can make a case that there's a different time in the year where one of these or some of these taken as a group or in isolation – you might be able to say, you know, that guy maybe needs to check what he's saying, this, that, and the other. Right now, this is all about guys getting fired up. Mm-hmm. They got to know what's at stake. They got to back up whatever they say. They got to back up what they don't say. They have to play the game of their lives. I mean, this is like an opportunity that these guys have worked for since they were 7, 8, 9 years old in some cases. And, man, say what – I would be talking.
I'm sure you would be talking.
I would be talking.
Where's the microphone?
If I was good at basketball and not a 6-foot white guy who can do very few things well on the court.
Mike Bibby.
Hey, maybe I could like challenge him to something. But
gotta get a headband,
if I was
though.
An NBA caliber player, I'm telling you right now, I'd be talking. Of course, I'd be talking. Mm-hmm. I'm in the NBA,
getting paid to play basketball.
And if I'm an all-star, former all-star, or a sixth man of the year, whatever the case may be, and my team's in the finals, I'm getting fired up. So that stuff this time of year, there's other times in the year where I'll go old man sports fan on you and kind of try and squash that a little bit. But right now I got no beef with it.
I don't either. So just keep doing what you're doing in that sense. Chandler needs to bring more of what he brought in game 4. He knows now pretty much he's going to have to handle this for the most part on his own with the tough break with Haywood. And the hip flexor, where it just doesn't look like he has that much to give. It sucks for him because I remember talking to him before game 3, where he was just frustrated and upset with the fact that you've been playing for X amount of years, you finally make it to the finals and now you get
hurt.
Oh, I
can imagine.
Yeah.
That really sucks. But Chandler's done an outstanding job these last couple games, staying out of foul trouble. The first half of game 3... he was very passive, though.
Right. No,
he had to get a feel for it. I think it's clear that by the way he played for the duration of game 4, that he kind of has gotten himself at least in a place, I hope it can carry over into game 5, where he can still be aggressive, but check the fouls. And you can't say enough about what he did in game 4. There were some things in game 4, from my perspective, that were... in some cases, significantly different. In other cases, maybe just different in subtle ways, but different enough that they added up to not only some of the difference in the game to actually get the W, but they added up to things that the Mavericks can build on and solving previous problems. The first is not just the defense. Defense has been awesome almost the entire series, if not the entire series. But in that second half, especially the last quarter plus... physical. They were more physical at the end of game 4 than they've been the rest of this time. And I thought it the whole time, Miami doesn't want to play physical. And then Deshaun came out today and said the exact same thing. Miami doesn't want to play physical. Of course they don't. They're the biggest floppinest sons of bitches you've ever seen. They flop like babies. They don't, other than Haslam, they don't have anybody that, in my opinion, has what constitutes a physical presence other than LeBron. But LeBron doesn't scrap down low. LeBron doesn't really... LeBron floats.
You forgot about Eric Dampier.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, look, and I give full credit to what Joel Anthony's done in this series. I mean, he's really stepped up. He's the kind of player that I'd love to see in a Dallas uniform. Those are the kind of players... we've talked about this before. The players like that I like to see. That's my favorite type of defensive basketball player. But... he's not an imposing presence. He's crafty and athletic, and that's where he's getting by. The Mavs can get in their head by being physical, and it definitely, the way they were attacking the pick and rolls late in game four, that really got into the head of Miami, and they need to find other ways to replicate that same kind of reaction from Miami by getting up into them, getting into their chest, doing it at the right time of the game where you're not going to pile up a bunch of fouls. You can't do it for 48 minutes because the whistles will just start going crazy, which is the downfall of NBA basketball, but it's true. sadly, you have to deal with it. But that's a big key that if they can continue to apply that, give D-Wade a hard foul. Find a way to give the guy a hard foul.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, because there hasn't been enough of that.
When you think about physicality and you think about grinding it out, this is kind of something friend of the show Skin was talking about yesterday that he was concerned. A concern was that the fact that the Mavs have had to be battling uphill through most of the series is that it's eventually going to grind on you and you're going to just fatigue out, basically. Do you think that Miami might actually be the one that gets fatigued the most because you've got guys like LeBron, Wade,
playing
Bosh,
heavy minutes
that have to play the heavy minutes but have so much responsibility to have to deal with? And they've had to do it all year long.
I think it's already clear based on the four games and what you've seen happen in all four games that the Mavericks have the mental edge. Period. They've fought back from deficits. They've put themselves in a hole partially because of some great defense by Miami, but mostly by being horrible on the offensive, on the defensive glass, by giving up way too many silly turnovers and just not knocking down shots. Yet they've continued. They've done things to themselves that could discourage any team, and they've always fought back. They fought back from a 15-point deficit. They fought back from a 9-point deficit. They had a final shot to tie a game in game three.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, game one, until the last
three minutes,
was right there in the balance. Just a few more plays and a little bit more of establishing what they wanted to do with Miami. If they were more familiar with the team like they are now, who knows how that goes. So mental edge is Dallas all the way. That being said, I don't see that being a factor very much in the last three games. Potential three games of this series, just because D-Wade's got his medal on the wall. You know what I'm saying? He has established what he's able to do in crunch time, and he has been awesome. Now, LeBron's a different story. He's a complete wild card. He could do what he did last night. He could do what he did in Detroit in 2007.
Right, Mark brought up.
Yeah. I'll never forget that. I was so amazed by that. And that was before I really hated the guy. So I was like, wow, this guy's awesome. I'm not going to be a fan of his, but I might be able to root for him in the East if he's playing against San Antonio or something, you know? So anyway, with all that being considered, I wouldn't look for the Heat to take any sort of step backward mentally as a result of that. But the Mavs, if there's an advantage to be had, it has to lie with Dallas at this point.
And you know,
unless something really bad happens in Game 5,
right?
You know, I mean that's the kind of thing that the pendulum can swing, you know, real easily.
With Game 5 being the way it is, I think the Mavs just kind of need to go balls out in the sense of minutes. I know minutes have been a concern for Marion, probably for Kid too, Dirk with being sick and everything. But the fact is, you've got 2 days off after this game. To where you're going to be, one of them's going to be a travel day, which I'm excited about, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
To go back to South Beach.
Good.
That was the second thing I thought of after
BG's
they won.
Taking his talents to South Beach.
I wouldn't go that far, but the fact that one of the days is going to be a light travel day and then you get that additional day of rest, you just have to put everything on the line in game five because you've got that extra rest. So if Marion's okay, you got to give him as many minutes as you can and sprinkle in Stevenson as much as you can as well. You just got to keep those guys working because defensively, they give you what you need, and offensively, they're doing the job right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, obviously, it's the finals. All the cards are out on the table. In terms of other things that happen in Game 4 that I think you can take away from, one is maybe the most important as far as needing to get carryover. We already talked about, and that's cleaning up the game.
Mm-hmm.
They allowed, what was it, 8 offensive rebounds?
I think it was
or 9 in the first quarter?
Yeah, in the first quarter.
Now, normally, Brian,
and Dallas had 10 rebounds as a whole.
If we look back at a game over the course of the season, which we did 82 times, and we see a team that pulls down 13 or 14 offensive rebounds, we go, that was kind of crappy.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas needs to watch that. 9 in a quarter? Excuse me? That's gone, dude. That's beyond anything that's even reasonable. I mean, you basically should have gifted them the lead after that quarter.
And it was tied.
And then the turnovers. 5 turnovers in the first quarter, 8 after the first half, and then they end the game with 10.
Yeah.
So they've corrected the turnover problem as the game went on. They corrected the offensive rebounding problem as the game went on. If you can carry that over, that's great.
That was one of the things I was actually thinking about on the drive here, that I'm not sure if it's that easy to do, but whatever problem the Mavs have in one game, they tend to fix it in the next game. And I don't know if it's...
Except for the first three games of this series.
Right, but as a whole, over the course...
They kept hitting their heads against the same wall in this series, which I think was what had people so frustrated at the end of Game 3. Not just that it was a close loss in the first game at home, but that they lost because of the same damn reasons that they lost Game 1.
But over the course
almost Game 2.
Over the course of the regular season and within a series, they've seen their weakness and they fix it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm kind of simplifying that as... Hey, that's what you should be doing. But I'm giving them credit for doing that because it's not, I would think, that easy to do, to fix your mistake.
Anybody can say we got to do X, Y, Z, but to be able to respond and be able to show the empirical results of what just happened in your correction, you have to be a really good team and a really good coaching staff to be able to do that and sustain the results. They obviously did it over the regular season. We've seen it happen in the playoffs. That was, I think, what was most discouraging, like I said, at the end of Game 3, was that you felt like, damn, it's just the same old crap. Chalmers and Bibby are hitting threes. You can't keep them off the offensive glass, and you're committing stupid turnovers, and you're missing open shots. It was those things.
I wouldn't really push the tempo as much as they probably want to because get too rattled at that point with thinking too much with the Miami defense and what they're going to be doing, swarming you. But you want to play quicker. You don't want to play in that half court unless you're just milking Dirk. If you're milking Dirk, he's going to be able to find a way to break down the defense one way or another. But again, it's just going to be dependent on their defense. So hopefully the
Nelly was the best at milking.
Yeah, he was. Nelly was the best at milking it. You've got to take the last, like you said, quarter and a half of Game 4, bring that into Game 5, and build a lead. You got to build a lead early in this game.
Yeah, don't do the chasing points thing. You've done it enough. Mm-hmm. You've done it. You've taken the two games from the deficit. So you got what you needed. Now is the time to put it all together. The third thing that happened that made Game 4 different that should be able to carry over to Game 5. We talked about it very briefly with Mark. The balance. Mm-hmm. The balance of contributions offensively from other guys other than Dirk. There is, I think, a little bit of wisdom to that idea that knowing that Dirk was, you know, not 100% forcing guys to step up, that's a little bit of a shock to the system, a little bit of a jolt that says, okay, I just executed on this. Now I can go and replicate it and imagine it should be easier for me to replicate that with a Dirk who's in better shape because he obviously draws more defensive attention, and the more he makes, the more attention he's going to get. Mm-hmm. So, that being said, you had five guys in double figures for the first time in this series in Game 4.
You only had one time where it had four.
And granted, you know, Stevenson was kind of a fluke there.
But you had Barea at eight.
Yeah, so you know, you look to somebody like Barea to be able to fill that hole there to be the fifth guy to get into double figures if it's an opportunity to do so. But you know, Jet delivering. You never know. Kid could knock down a couple threes.
I mean, he didn't have any points in Game 4.
So point being, you can replicate that. You have seen now everything the Miami defense pretty much is going to throw at you unless they try to do something that's very unorthodox, gimmicky, or otherwise junky. It's pretty much out on the table, both teams. It's all out on the cards, and you have now figured out what to do to get yourself in a position to put the ball in the hole, whether that was Marion or Chandler or Jet in this case the other night. There's no reason why they can't take that and move it forward, and armed with a fully functional Dirk, they should be able to execute properly, get out to a good lead, have a good start, and then just, you know, play a good, solid Dallas Mavericks basketball game.
I think the comforting thing was that Dirk had his sick game, and they still won, but his inefficient game, and they still won.
Yeah.
You're not going to see Dirk go 6-for-19 in this series again. I mean, he just can break down the defense however he wants to. He can get to the rim, get his one leg fadeaway, whatever. So that's got to be a problem for Miami, where they got the bad Dirk game, but they still didn't get the W. They've got to figure out what they're going to do with LeBron in his head, because he's not in that alpha dog role anymore, and he's just stuck on the three-point line. at this point.
Do you think he's going to come out in Game 5 looking for a shot? There's a lot of people out there who think he is.
If they do, I almost want them to, because they're taking away from Wade then.
If he's fallen in love with the perimeter again, yeah, then he can do it all day, all night, and twice on Sunday.
I still feel good, even if he's aggressive, to where Stevenson or Marion, they've done a pretty decent job staying in front of him.
Right.
So I feel good in that sense, but I still think if they're trying to get him aggressive, that's taking away from Wade. And Wade's been the one that's been killing him in this series. Bosch has been good in this series when he's not getting poked in the eye. but I still... Wade's the one that concerns me the most. So if LeBron takes away from that and is not going to be as efficient, go ahead, Miami.
Then so be it.
Yeah.
There's only one ball.
There is.
A wise man once said there is only one ball.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
So, basketball.
I'm saying it. The Mavs win game 5.
You said in 6.
I said 6.
So if your prediction holds, then we're going to be scot-free by June 12th.
We're going to be our next show will be a celebration show.
That would be okay.
It's either going to be a celebration show or we're getting ready for the draft.
Or a draft show.
One of the two. One of the two.
Oh, God. And you know what, dude? My draft prep is going to be about this thick. And for those of you who aren't streaming, I'm holding my fingers very close together.
You could put a credit card there.
You could pretty much, maybe. You could shove a credit card in there and it might go in. So
that's what she's.
Let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's hope that things turn out a little bit better. I know for one thing, Brian Gutierrez is going to be right there covering it all for your pleasure and consumption on MavsFastBreak.com, Mavs.com. Always Google Mavericks Outsider Report. Google us. You will find us. Check us out on Twitter. Ballin' with Brian. Bryan and Rylan, Rylan underscore. Don't forget the underscore. It's very crucial. Row, Rowe. Again, I registered for that not thinking I'd be giving it out in an audio format. So, but whatever. It's what I got. I'm rolling with
the
it.
The underscore works.
So,
I like it.
We certainly appreciate everybody sticking with us here. Mavericks Outsider Report, episode number, quote, 32, close quote. And Mark Folliwell, obviously,
yes,
as always,
thank
super
you.
Grateful for him jumping on and chopping it up with us. As I've said before, he's a gentleman who thinks and lives sports and basketball, and his voice is heard on a lot of different outlets, but we provide the most unstructured outlet.
And he loves
and
it.
I think that's part of why he keeps calling us, because it's not because we are awesome or anything. So
he just loves to be free.
Anyway, free Mark.
Yeah.
Free follow up. So, yeah, again, you know where to find us. And if you don't know where to find us, then you don't hear this. So, I don't know what to say.
So, go ahead and put on your Heat jersey.
Yeah, just put your Heat.
You can't read. You can't hear.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what we can do for you.
Put the Heat jersey on. Get your 12-pack of Keystone Light and just be yourself and leave us alone. We're going all out for the Mavs. Home game, Dallas. No matter what happens, last home game. If you are in the general area and a listener of ours, be sure and represent out there.
Roblue.
And if anybody has a free ticket, clearly I'm available. So
who's got one?
Who's got one? Anybody got one? I need one. That's all I really have to say, brother.
Yeah.
I appreciate everybody for sticking with us and listening. And we will be back when much. Hey, we're
7 to 10 days from now.
Yeah, we're still flow offense. Yeah. So we'll be back when we tell you we're coming back. Look, this is Rick Carlisle led operation. Be ready. That's all I can
and
say.
And you said look, so that definitely means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, our disposition is that you need to be ready to listen to us when we say we're coming
on. If you
on.
Say look, it's Carlisle. If you say obviously,
it's Dirk. Yeah.
Obviously, if you watch the game of basketball, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, Brian, it was fun.
Colin Cowherd and the Herd is next via the TJBC. That's it. We're going to see you guys in 7 to 10 days with something great or something not so great. So we will see you next week. Analysis.
That's it and that's all.
Can't wait.
I don't trust him. His name is Ryland.